In a time like none of us have experienced before, there's strength to be found in community institutions like Iowa Public Radio. I'm Executive Director Myrna Johnson, and I'm so proud of the thoughtful, informed coverage IPR brings you on the issues that matter. Listener funding is the power source that makes it all possible. Facts, understanding, insight, that's what you fund when you give to this station. Make your gift now at iowapublicradio.org, and thank you.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, we'll meet Donald G., a college student who's organizing a virtual choir dedicated to thanking teachers. But first, there is nothing like a great love story. Michelle Morano's essay collection, Like Love, is filled with stories that are almost love stories. She uses her memories, experiences, and relationships to explore love and neighboring emotions in surprising and powerful ways. Morano is the chair of the English department at DePaul University in Chicago. She earned her PhD in English and an MFA in nonfiction writing at the University of Iowa, and she is on the line with me now. Hello, Michelle.
Hello. Thank you. Good morning. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, I'm delighted to have you here. And I'm curious about the genesis of this project, because it is a collection of almost love stories. And I had a hard time coming up with ways to explain that or describe that. On the jacket of your book, someone calls them non-consummated love stories. That's the phrase I'm looking for. And that kind of describes them. But tell me where this idea came from.
Well, you know, I was a few years ago, I was at a point where I thought, I'm ready to make a book. And what am I going to make a book about? I'd been writing and publishing a lot of different essays and kind of looked through them all and saw a pattern that I tended to write about very intense relationships that were extremely romantic, but that didn't actually result in romance. And very often, they weren't heading in that direction. I didn't want them to result in romance, but they felt romantic nonetheless. And so I started thinking, maybe there's something to this. And, you know, I'm someone who has my whole life gotten crushes on people. I still do. I think that's true for a lot of us, but often we're a bit embarrassed to admit that. And I think that crushes sometimes are really good forces in our lives, especially if we don't take them too seriously or, you know, just allow ourselves to feel what we feel. So the more I thought about that topic, the more experiences came back to me. And I thought, maybe I really do have a book here. So then I just started writing the pieces that I hadn't yet drafted.
I would love for you to read a little bit from one of the essays that appears pretty early in the book, and it introduces us to the whole book is a memoir, but a memoir portion of the book that's really about your family when you were an adolescent and your parents were going through some very, very difficult times. Can you read us a little bit from the essay Breaking and Entering?
Sure. This is the opening of that essay. There is nothing illegal about breaking into your own home. As long as your name is on the deed, it doesn't matter if your worn silver key won't unlock the back door. It's still your house, so go ahead. Smash the window and let yourself in. That's what my mother's lawyer had advised, and it's what she intended to do. The rest of us waited while she rummaged through the garage. It was 6 o'clock on a late September evening in New York's mid-Hudson Valley, the air soft and warm, maple helicopters twirling into the gravel driveway. My brother and I stood in the small backyard and looked at the shingled houses to the side and behind us. A month before, we'd jumped rope on that patio, swum in that above-ground pool, sauntered up these back stairs toward a jar of sugar cookies. It was the end of summer vacation then. Now my mother emerged from the garage carrying a brick. "This'll work," she said, holding it against her shoulder as she climbed the back steps. Uncle Marty, recently married to my mother's sister, held the screen door open while three grown cousins stood in the driveway. It was absolutely illegal for any of them to break the window, so they kept their distance and called out encouragement. "Use the end of the brick," Andy advised. "Be careful you don't put your hand through," added Philip. After the first try, Timmy said, "Harder, Aunt Reet," and my mother nodded. She'd never broken a window before. So that's the beginning of an essay that is about, you know, embedded into this collection is kind of a memoir of this breakup of my family when I was an adolescent. In 1976, my mother left my father for a woman. And this was at a time when it was, considered evidence of negligent parenting if a parent were involved in a same-sex relationship. And so there was a lot of drama that ensued with a custody hearing or a custody attempt for my father to gain custody. And it was a really tumultuous time. And it was a time when I was, you know, coming into adolescence and paying close attention to romance and watching my mother have this illicit, but in some ways really wonderful, at least in the beginning, new relationship. And so they're woven through the book is that story and really the story of my mother's relationship with me and our kind of breakup and then kind of coming back together later.
And we're suddenly experiencing a lot of static on the line, Michelle. Let's try to talk here for a moment and then we'll switch over to the phone line if we need to. But
okay.
Oh, you know what? Let's just go ahead and switch to that phone line because now you sound like a robot. So, well,
okay,
are you there?
I'm so sorry. I'm here. Yes.
Wonderful. And so in thinking about the point that you were at in your life, watching your mom experience these new feelings, you write about her relationship with this new woman in her life, this new woman in your life, and seeing your mom very much in love and really affectionate and happy in ways that you hadn't seen her with your dad, at least not for a long time with your dad. When you were writing these essays, were you able to see what was happening then in your memories in a different way?
I think I was able to see it with more empathy toward everyone involved than I had had at the time. When it was first happening, I was very much aligned with my mother and very angry with my father. Later on, I began to, grow a little bit estranged from my mother and more aligned with my father. And I think in the end, as I was writing the book, I was really trying to look at every person in all of their complexity with disappointments and desires and losses that were compounding. It was an interesting perspective to be writing it from this vantage point and reliving those experiences.
You also, the way you write about it helps me understand, but I suspect it even helped you understand that a lot of the loss and anger you felt was in many ways you felt like your mother had left you for this love in her life.
Yes, that's in part because my mother did reconcile with my father after a little under a year, at a point when I think she was kind of overwhelmed with what it meant to be in the situation she was in. And so we returned to my father's home. And then before very long, she left again. And at that point, I really just couldn't imagine moving again, in part because there had been so much upheaval and in part because I thought, well, my father's going to sue for custody again. And so we're just going to be back in the same place we were before. And so by staying with him, I kind of headed off that dilemma. But it really caused a rift with my mother. I was very, I did feel, although paradoxically it was my choice not to go with her the second time, I definitely did feel abandoned.
Well, as a teenager, paradoxically is kind of the whole thing, right?
Exactly, yes.
In exploring your feelings about your mom and thinking about that love that you shared, that feeling of rejection that you experienced and looking at it in a new way, did that bring you some clarity in your feelings? I know relationships between mothers and daughters can be so complicated and evolve in so many ways over a lifetime.
Yes, that's absolutely true. And I think it did give me clarity. I wrote a number of these essays including one that really delves into our long-term relationship after my mother's death. And so I think it's hard to separate that out, the writing process, from the fact of her being gone, because I'm not sure I could have written that same essay while she was alive. But with her kind of in the past, I think I was able to revisit our time together with what I hope is a sense of compassion and empathy for each of us. So it was an interesting writing experience to try to make my mother a full character on the page with all of her complexity, and at the same time capture myself as a full character, and then our relationship in its complexity, both in good and bad ways.
And throughout the collection, you are juxtaposing these stories about your adolescence, and later we get to spend time with you and your mother. You're an adult, you're in your 30s, and she's there spending some time with you and working through some of those issues. But you juxtapose that against many different stories from many different times in your life where you have felt a strong attraction to someone, although not necessarily what most of us would call love. Why did you want to bring those stories together?
That's a great question. Thank you. I'm really perpetually interested in time and memory and the way we experience our lives. We think that we're going through life in chronological order, and in some ways we are. You know, Monday follows Sunday, and we age every year. But on a day-to-day basis, we're really experiencing the past, present, and future, sometimes almost simultaneously. So, you know, you're going about your day and something happens, you don't know what, and suddenly you're back in this memory that can feel very real and very present. And so I was interested in kind of recreating that experience for readers in this book and looking at various relationships and entanglements I've been involved in. And then moving from those back again to this adolescent story, back again to this kind of formative experience in my life of having my family break apart and having my own identity suddenly seem very precarious. And so I think that love works in some ways the way grief does, that each time we experience it, we're also circling back to the previous occasions. And we're going to explore
that idea more in just a moment. I am talking with Michelle Morano. She is the author of Like Love. This is Talk of Iowa. Brilliant novels, groundbreaking nonfiction, evocative poetry, great books, and insightful conversations whenever you want them on the Talk of Iowa Book Club podcast. Pick the books that speak to you or read them all. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we will meet Donald G. He's trying to assemble a virtual choir dedicated to thanking teachers. Right now, I'm talking with Michelle Morano. She is the author of the new essay collection, Like Love. It's all about love and emotions that neighbor love, our strong connections and feelings for other humans that don't quite fall under the category of romantic love. It's a memoir, but it also really expands our ideas of what love is. Morano is the chair of the English department at DePaul University in Chicago, and she earned her PhD in English and an MFA in nonfiction writing from the University of Iowa, and one of the long and beautiful essays in the collection takes us all over Iowa City. It was a fun walk through the town that you lived in, the town that I live in, Michelle. And I want to return to what we were talking about just before the break, when you were talking about how as we love and experience relationships with people, those things that we learn and gain are with us all the time. They're constantly present, and these strong emotions that we feel can come back to us at many different times. In the collection, you write about a lot of different relationships, very powerful, strong connections that you had with other people. And the collection resonated deeply with me, Michelle, but I feel like so many of these relationships and feelings that you talked about are things that probably a lot of us feel, but we would never talk about.
I think that's true. Yes, based on what I've heard from readers, that does seem to be the case. Yeah.
So was that difficult to be so vulnerable and open about having dreams about someone that you recently met and things that, again, that we wouldn't necessarily want to share?
Right. You know, it's so funny because I think a lot of creative nonfiction writers experience this, that the things that I feel really vulnerable and embarrassed or ashamed of are not things that are in the book. And they're not things that if you heard them, you would necessarily say, well, that's a good reason to be ashamed. Do you know what I mean? Our weaknesses are so individual and idiosyncratic. And so I feel like the things I wrote about, I'm totally fine with everything I've written about in this. And it didn't, I mean, yes, there's vulnerability, of course. And that comes in large part from writing about my family and telling stories that sort of happened under a veil of secrecy at the time. But yeah, it really was kind of fun to bring people into my mind and to know that I was out on a limb in some cases and would maybe make readers a little bit nervous. But I don't feel that way.
Several of the relationships that you write about are new friendships, moments where you meet someone and have a strong connection with them. And, you know, I think that we've all felt that really kind of feeling of falling in love with a new friend. But the friends that you write about happen to be men. And that always kind of, for a heterosexual woman, I think that that does bring a different element into the relationship. You didn't write about falling in love with female friends, for example, although you've probably had experiences where you've fallen for somebody that you wouldn't be interested in sexually.
Yeah, there is one essay about my best friend growing up that is I was trying to capture kind of the romantic context of our relationship, even though it's called Boy Crazy, and we really were very much boy crazy at the time. But we were also kind of each other's default partner at that point. And I think I mentioned a crush on a woman. But no, they're mostly, I think these, for me at least, these fraught relationships have mostly been with men, because I think there's just more of a continuum for women from close friendship into romance, you know, women friends. And so with the men, it was a little different because there always was that other possibility kind of hanging in the air.
Well, and for men, we've heard a lot in recent years about the fact that men don't seem to have as many close friends as women do. There's something culturally that has made that more and more difficult for men. And that's part of the complication here as well, isn't it? That you can be a close friend with a man, but he may not have that same kind of comfortable relationship with friendship.
I think that's true, but I would be really interested in the gender breakdown of these friendships, because I know a lot of men who do have close friendships with women, more so than with men. And so I think that's another element of it. I think that it's difficult for men to have close friendships with other men. But I think it might be slightly different when it's a male-female relationship. But it definitely, I think, you know, you're right. It's definitely a thing. And I think it's part of what studies have shown, that it's part of why, you know, men tend to fare more poorly after, for example, a divorce, in terms of their health and their well-being and their level of happiness and resilience than women do. And I think it has to do with that close circle of friends that women are often able to draw on.
One of your essays, you wrote about an experience that you had as a teacher at a camp, and you Yes. call it nerd camp. This resonated with me on many, many levels, because I attended a nerd camp when I was a child. And I also I'm a mentor to young people. So this resonated with me on all kinds of different levels. But you're writing about a very powerful connection that you had with a student of yours. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah. So this is an essay called Crushed. and it is about having an actual crush on a 12-year-old student of mine when I was 30 years old. And the essay is really about, I think it implicitly asks the question, if one is not actually a pedophile, what does desire mean in this situation? You know, I think this sort of thing happens all the time. I know that students from, you know, early grades on through college and graduate school get crushes on their teachers all the time. And I know that the reverse also happens. But we're really afraid to talk about this, especially, you know, and for good reason, especially with younger students. But I think that it's worth thinking about, you know, what does that mean? What does it mean when you want to be your best self in the presence of another person, regardless of their age? And what does thinking about that attraction, connection, help us understand about who we are and how we live?
In writing about that, I found myself, I mean, obviously that's a difficult subject to write about, but it also made me feel like humans are pretty limited in our understanding of attraction, because it was difficult to read about that without thinking, oh, wow, she's treading very close to a line here, although there was nothing untoward about the relationship.
Right. Yeah. Actually, you know, it's interesting because in the first draft of that essay, I was really careful to stay pretty far away from the line. And then, you know, when I was getting ready to publish it, I looked it over one more time and thought, my palms aren't sweating enough here. You know, I haven't really, I'm playing it too safe. And I think that the reader needs to feel just a little bit uncertain in places about how is this going to go and can I really trust this person? I knew that I could trust myself, so it was okay for me to be moving up a little bit closer to that line. But yeah, I think it is a really, and I also think, I mean, I have an incredibly strong ethical center when it comes to this sort of situation. And so I was very aware throughout that entire experience that I could not make a single wrong move. You know what I mean? Like not even something joking. And because I felt very entrusted with the young people I was teaching. But at the same time, it is a really, I think it's a really interesting phenomenon. And I'm afraid we don't talk about it enough in honest ways.
When I was reading that, I also thought, you know, as a mother, I would recognize the emotion that you were feeling, this connection to this child that you were feeling in a different way, because I am so madly in love with my children and their potential and the people that they are. I thought if she were a mother at this point in her life, she might recognize that emotion in a different way. And then later on, of course, you become a mother. And I thought, oh, yes, I see you experiencing what would have been the resonance in my experience. Do you think about that story differently now that you're a mother?
Well, it's interesting because my son is now the exact same age as that student was. The difference being my son is a much more physically mature kid than the boy in the story. The boy in the story actually looked 10. He was incredibly young for his age. And so I do very often think in my dealings with my son, and the final essay in the book is in part about the romance of mothering, which of the many things I wasn't prepared for as a mother, how romantic that situation can be was really shocking to me. But I do think often, and it's interesting because I think of it as that earlier kind of crush I bring into my relationship with my son and think about him now from that perspective of someone, a teacher who had a crush on a child this age. It is really interesting.
Well, and in writing about your relationship with your son, again, something that resonated very strongly for me as a mom and as a mom of a son, there is that, for so many mothers and sons, there is that period of time where there are these almost romantic overtones. You were talking about your son wanting to practice kissing like a married person with you. And I remember my 6-year-old son saying, oh, let's go upstairs and kiss, Mom. You know, things like that that you know sound pretty weird if you're not a parent. But there is this incredible affection, desire, love that can experience, you know, that can exist between a mother and a son at that time. And then, of course, as your kids, and it can experience, you know, you can experience that between a mother and a daughter as well. But as your child grows, that part of it goes away, which can be a little bit difficult when your 13-year-old son looks at you like you couldn't possibly know anything.
Right. Yes. And for some of us, that starts a lot earlier than 13. but I think, you know, what was interesting to me at the time, because that essay, actually, there is one person at the heart of it, but it really is a composite character of all these boys who there's a tender age between usually between, say, 12 and 14, when they're both boys and you can see the men that they're going to become, and they seem very vulnerable. You just feel like, oh, gosh, things could go any which way for you right now. And then at a certain point, that vulnerable seeming period is over and they're kind of fully teenagers. So I think it is really interesting. Yeah, they become more enculturated as men at a certain stage. And I'm really interested to see what's going to happen in my life when we get to that point. But right now, I still have a 12-year-old who can be pretty sweet when he wants to be.
You take us on so many different journeys in this collection. What do you want people to take away from the experience of reading it and thinking about their own attractions while they're reading?
Yeah, thank you for that question. I think what's on my mind most is just the ways that we have so many narratives in our culture that sort of press down on us and tell us how our stories should go. That if there's romance, it should go in this direction. It should end in this way. It should proceed along a certain rather predictable course. And I think that's really damaging. You know, it comes a lot from movies and songs and just sort of the general way that we're a pretty romantic culture, I think, in many ways. We romanticize a lot in this country. And we romanticize a lot of friendships to our detriment, I think, sometimes. So I think I would just hope that people might read this book and kind of think a little bit about, oh, there are other ways that these stories can go. And they can be really instructive and sometimes painful and sometimes really beautiful, sometimes all at one time. But they don't have to go the way that we necessarily expect.
Have you been hearing from readers who want to confess to you some experience that they've had that your book made them think about in a new way?
I have. Yeah, there are a lot of romantic friendships out there. I've had men actually say to me, oh, I was just like that one guy in that one essay, and I really wish I hadn't been. So yeah, unfortunately, the book came out during the pandemic. I had done a couple of readings of pieces before the pandemic, so that was really great to be able to talk to people afterwards. And then during the pandemic, everything's been happening on Zoom, so I haven't had as many opportunities to talk in person with people. So I'm looking forward to that at some point.
Well, I can just imagine that it makes people want to confess. And again, I mean, I saw myself in so many of these stories, and I think probably almost everybody does see at least a little bit of themselves in one of the stories. I also found myself thinking about how our cell phone culture and social media would change the stories that you told. There's a friendship, sort of a single-serving friendship that you had on a trip to Germany, and how the way that we extend relationships through technology would have changed that relationship. That would have been somebody that you would have continued to communicate with, probably, instead of a two-day beautiful memory. So it's interesting to think about.
It's so true. And I think that there is a little something lost now that we can no longer really be anonymous with one another after these short encounters happen. Yeah.
Well, it is a beautiful collection. What are you planning to work on next?
Well, I have another essay collection ongoing, and then I'm also working on a book-length essay that is about the subject of what it means to have a good death, how humans conceive of what a good death is, if in fact there is such a thing. So it's an interesting time to be working on that.
Oh, for sure. And you really, you provided me with so much food for thought in this collection. I'm looking forward to reading that as well. Michelle Morano, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Michelle Morano's essay collection is called Like Love, and it's filled with stories that are almost nearly love stories. Coming up in just a moment, I'll talk with Donald G. He's a student at Georgia Tech. He grew up in Johnston, Iowa, and he's trying to put a virtual choir together to thank teachers. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.